Now, here's Eric.
And good morning. This is Computer Talk with Tab. I'm Eric.
And I'm Dennis.
That's Dennis Howland. He's one of the employee owners at Tab. Comes in and helps me out with your computer problems, comments, questions, and concerns. We're here till 11 o'clock, and we're commercial-free thanks to the good folks over at GoNetSpeed. Those guys have brought competition to the state of Connecticut, where we actually have affordable internet. No matter how much Pura tried to not allow it to happen, and our legislators who don't understand how the market works, now we finally have affordable internet in the state of Connecticut. Let's do electricity next. But I digress. That's just too hard, Dennis. But we're here till 11 o'clock. Feel free to get online. Because who needs electricity? I mean, internet's much more important than electricity.
Well, yeah, right?
So feel free to get online. We do have three lines open. 860-522-9842 is the number. And we'll do our best to help you out with those issues. So get online. But as usual and customary, we do talk about technology news that you can use or cry about like we do every day. Because we can't believe it, frankly.
Right.
What do you want to start with, Dennis?
Well, I wanted to talk about that so-called hack of 2.9 billion, people.
Yeah, we brought it up last week because it was a big thing.
But it's been a lot. There's been a lot of news about it all this week, too.
Right.
And it turns out that it's not a hack of 2.9 billion people.
No, the company wasn't that good.
No. What it is a hack of some data.
Yep.
That is in 2.9 billion rows, but each of those records is just a little snippet.
Right.
So it, in total, it doesn't cover anywhere near 2.9 billion people.
No.
More like a few million.
Right. Still enough, but still annoying.
It has an impact, but it's not billions. What was originally reported.
Right.
It was just way exaggerated.
Yeah.
What's happened since last week is that some, you know, tech writers have been diving into what's available to see the nature of the leak or breach or whatever you want to call it.
Right.
And it turns out that the data, number one, a lot of it is mislinked.
Mm-hmm.
It'll have somebody's name and an address that they supposedly live at.
Yeah, but
the address doesn't have anything to do with them.
I love it.
Okay. another problem is that there are social security numbers.
Yeah.
But then there's just gibberish text with it. So there's no linkage between the social security number and a person.
So the people who are actually using this information to do background checks clearly did a really poor job of organizing their data.
Well, we're going to get to what I think this data is, and then we'll hold off on that for moment, okay?
Yep.
Now, Troy Hunt, who runs the website called Have I Been Pwned?
Yes.
And is a really, really valuable resource on the internet right now. He's got a lot to say, and he does a lot of good work.
Yep. And we'll put a link to this.
Yeah, we're going to link to this. He looked into the data and he even checked with people that are in there that he was able to contact.
Right.
And these little bits of information he verified don't have anything to do with them.
Right. So you can't link a social security number to a person, to an address. So it's less valuable.
Well, in some cases there are, but every one that he was able to track down and try to confirm was a failure.
Gotcha.
So somewhere in this mess of data, there might actually be a valid linkage between a person and something else, but he couldn't find any.
All right, that's good.
Brian Krebs also did his own explanation of what the data is, and we're going to link to that too.
Yeah, Brian's amazing.
Troy Hunt's article is a little bit deeper dive into the details of the data, but Krebs does a better job of explaining how it was apparently gathered by the hackers and then how it was leaked out in little snippets on the dark web over the past few months, beginning in April.
Yeah.
And of course, the company that had the data finally, as of yesterday, admitted that they had been hacked. Now, what I'm going to...
All over the news, but...
Based on my reading and having looked at what Troy Hunt had to say and what he was looking at, I have to wonder if this, especially because there's a lot of deceased people in here, a lot of them. It isn't all records from deceased people, but there are a ton of them.
Yeah.
I think that this is old data from some kind of an old database.
Used in Chicago voting. No? Oh, sorry.
Well, there are people
or Bridgeport?
There are people from the UK in here, so I don't know how good it would be for voting.
No.
But at any rate, I think it's an old database from some old application that they had.
Yeah.
And it was leftover data.
Gotcha.
And that's why some of the records contain things that don't relate to each other, because whatever relational database system was managing this data just hasn't been working for a few years.
Right.
And it may be that it was, you know, like a backup of that data for that application that was not secured.
Right.
So that the hackers were able to get that piece of data.
Right.
But whereas live data that would be more valuable and more valid, they were somehow not able to get. So this is what they were able to capture, and they took it.
Gotcha.
And, you know, that's all they knew at the time that they were probably trying to vacuum it up.
And we were part of the whole thing, too. Like, last week we brought it up, 2 billion people. And I mean, you get the all the news medias are all talking about it. So I've got people texting me, hey, what should I do about this? Should I stop my credit? Should I freeze my credit? Hey, okay. The good news is you're probably okay in this instance.
Right.
But if you want to find out if you have been pwned, you can go to that website.
Go to Have I Been Pwned,
And that's a kid term there.
Yeah, it's a little obscure, but basically the website is a catalog of breaches.
Right.
And you can search it.
It's the dark web. It's what the dark web. It's not the dark web, but it's what the dark web knows about you.
Correct.
Right.
And you can go there. You can put in, say, your email address, and it'll search for every breach that Troy Hunt knows about.
Right.
And it'll tell you, you know, when it was breached, what it was breached with.
Right.
And you can then take steps to deal with that.
Very good. All right. Thanks, Dennis. And other news. So, you know, we talk about EULAs all the time, user license agreements. And, you know, I always used the joke that you're giving away your firstborn just to get online.
Yes.
So, I mean, Xbox, you know, they had a EULA agreement that I actually decided to read when a few years back. And I just arrowed down. It was like 5-10 minutes of just pages going by as far as my accepting to get online as a gamer. And in this case, Disney claims agreeing to Disney Plus terms waives a man's right to sue over his wife's death.
What?
Yep. You can't make it up. Then you got attorneys too. That's just them doing their jobs. Walt Disney Parks and Resorts wants a wrongful death lawsuit filed against it and one of its tenants, an Irish pub, to be booted from court and over to arbitration because back in 2019, many years before his wife lost her life due to some sort of allergic reaction, he had agreed to a 30-day Disney Plus subscription. And within that subscription to Disney Plus, it's stated when you interact with Disney in any way, shape, or form, it is any dispute with us must go to arbitration.
Must go?
Yep.
Wow.
So what they're sticking in these EULA is, like I said, you're giving up your firstborn. In this case, you're giving up your ability to sue for food poisoning. No, this is an allergic reaction that killed your loved one because of a subscription you did back in 2019. So, guys, along with the fact that these companies, like software companies, can have no warranties on their software, we got to change these EULAs to say, come on, there needs to be some sort of expiration on this ridiculousness. It probably won't hold up, we hope, you know, but the fact that they said it, and this is really where you should be afraid. And when it comes to anything, whether it be in the cloud, whether it be any kind of service you're agreeing to these days, most likely, if you look into the EULA, the cloud, especially in the cloud, in the case of the cloud, there's this shared responsibility model that you may not be aware of in the cloud, where you put your data in the cloud, but the cloud's not responsible for your data.
Oh, really?
They're not going to back it up. They don't really care if somebody gets access to it. And by the way, you're saying, I agree to this. And if you happen to go down for, you know, weeks or months or however long it takes, you're agreeing that you're not going to go after them because there was no actual warranty on the service that you're buying. So this is an exact example of that. So we'll put a link up here for you guys to read yourself. This is from our friends over at the Register, across the pond, Boot Notes. And it's pretty interesting, but it's sad that he lost his wife after eating something at the Irish pub in Disney Springs.
Ooh.
Anything you want to bring up, Dennis?
Oh, yeah. I was going to bring up something else.
Mm-hmm.
We have a case where there's a company that makes sous vide cookers.
Sous vide, yeah. I've never heard of this before.
Well, it's when you cook something in hot water that's at a specific temperature for a certain length of time inside of like a vacuum pack, you know, plastic.
Okay.
And it's a way to cook in a very controlled manner so that the food comes out exactly the way you want it. And
nice.
And it's been around for a while, but this company makes sous vide cookers, and there are other companies that do something similar where it has the cooker has Wi-Fi, and there's an app that you can have on your phone or tablet that kind of tells you about what you're cooking. You can program the thing a little more in a little more complicated way. It can tell you when it's done cooking.
Mm-hmm. Always nice to know.
Right. But at any rate, the app is just this little convenience thing.
I mean,
you can still cook with the device without it.
Okay. Good. Yeah.
You have basic functionality.
You can turn it on and off.
And you can set a timer on it.
Right.
That's pretty much it. Anyway, and they've had this app out for about 10 years.
You're kidding.
Yeah. I mean, this is
very
something
convenient.
That they've offered it a very long time.
Yeah.
Now they've decided that, number one, it's not a free app anymore. You have to pay $2 a month or $10 a year to use it.
You're kidding.
When it was free for years and years and years.
They want $2 from you forever.
Right.
To rent the app.
Yep.
To boil water.
The second thing is...
Oh my God.
Okay. Well, if you're going to put it that way, I guess it is kind of dumb. But at any rate, the second thing that they're doing is there are some of these cookers that have Bluetooth in addition to Wi-Fi. Okay.
High-end.
And with Bluetooth, you could still have the app on your phone, and you might be able to actually directly tell the cooker what to do, and it can talk to your phone directly.
Wow.
Okay.
Yep.
Over Bluetooth.
Nice.
Well, they're going to disable Bluetooth on all these things.
Unless you pay for the app.
No, they're disabling Bluetooth.
Jeez.
And the reason is that they force you to use the app because the device won't communicate with your phone directly over Wi-Fi.
Right.
It goes through their cloud to come down. And that's where the subscription lies.
To confirm the registration into the subscription.
Yeah. So, you know, if you don't have that subscription, the sous vide cooker can tell them anything, and it's never going to get to your phone.
Yeah.
And people who own these things are naturally livid.
Oh, yeah.
You know, people have been going after the company. The other maybe inconvenient fact about this for the company.
Yeah.
Is that they've never really updated the app since they released it 10 years ago.
Well, they can't afford you. That's why they do the $2. They can't find a good programmer.
So it's a 10-year-old app that they're now charging for.
They can't get Bob to work on it until they get some money. Oh, man. I thought you were going to, the subscription was going to also include locations so they knew where you were.
Who knows? Maybe that is part of it. I have no idea. But all I know is that people are livid, and it's understandable.
They should be. Well, in other news, I was on with Brian on Tuesday, and we talked a little bit. We just get this really short shrift. I guess there was a study about kids who are given screens at like 3.5 years old. I mean, that's just mind-boggling to me. Now, I'm not, you know, I raised three boys. Generally, they're well-adjusted. We're hoping. And when we were raising our kids, the only thing we read about making, you know, helping your kids get smarter or what have you was all about Baby Mozart.
Oh, right.
Remember
right.
Baby Mozart?
Yeah.
So we played Baby Mozart for the kids, and because we're big proponents of music education, and we think it improves kids' brains because we just think it does. And we could be ding dongs there too. Who knows? I think it does. And we bought right into the Baby Mozart movement, and we're playing Baby Mozart. That's as far as we went, as far as some fad. And this is not necessarily a fad. These screens now, you're giving a 3.5-year-old a screen.
Oh.
It doesn't really take a study like this to say you're probably going to have a problem with your kid. You're literally like possibly damaging your kid's ability to grow and learn. By giving your kid these screens so early. And there's these studies that were out. We'll put a link to the study itself. And again, it's all back to, you know, you're talking to your friends and raising kids, and they're like, you did what with a kid? What book did you read? And, you know, it's like, you know, we don't know. We have a kid. There's no manual that comes with them. You're like, you just do your best. You know, you don't want to, you're trying not to raise an axe murderer. And so you're this information about giving your kid a screen at 3.5. And we would see these, my wife and I would go into these restaurants. We see these little kids at the restaurant with the screens. And we're looking to ourselves and we're trying not to be judgy, but we're like, are you kidding me? You can't keep that kid under control without giving him a screen at 3.5. Oh. You know, we used to give the kids crayons.
Yep.
And again, we're not the super parents or anything like that, but you guys got to take a look at this. If you got kids or grandkids that are this young, what turns out is that they become a problem at 4, 4.5. They act out. They're much more quick to anger. And this is what this study said. They covered like 7,000 kids or something like that. And again, experts, right? Who are the experts? Do your own research. But it just seems to me, as obvious as sucking smoke into your lungs would seem to be a dumb idea, putting a tablet in front of a 3.5-year-old, probably not the smartest idea either. It's not baby Mozart. They're just sitting there. I don't know what's happening to their little noggins, but I just picture it melting.
Oh.
Because we're all getting addicted to this stuff. So we'll put the link up here for you, and you can read all about it. American Academy of Pediatrics recommends avoiding screens for children younger than 18 to 24 months. Jeez, thanks.
Really?
Except when video chatting with family. So they also say to limit screen time for preschool children ages 2 to 5, just 1 hour a day of high quality programming like Sesame Street. So that's screen time on TV. Of course, we sat our kids. They watched the Teletubbies, but and that was really bizarre to watch too. But putting a tablet in your kid's hands probably is going to be a problem. And again, I'm not some super parent. What do I know? But I'll put a link up here for you. Anything else you want to bring up?
Oh, yeah. Microsoft put out some guidance about using their AI.
Yes, this is funny. This is so funny.
This is hilarious.
This is kind of this. I'll let you say it, but I was like, this is why it feels like .com bubbly to me. This is exactly from Microsoft as interpreted by the Register, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
It's from the Register. Part of their service agreement covering their AI functions or their EULA.
Yeah.
And it takes effect September 30th of this year.
Yes. They delay it, which is kind of weird.
Yeah, that's also kind of odd. And I'll quote from it. AI services are not designed, intended, or to be used as substitutes for professional advice.
Right.
Now you and I will laugh and cry over some of the stuff that's in you was like we just did with Disney.
Disney, yeah.
Okay. How...
I know.
Why do they need to include that statement?
I wonder.
How do people using this not know?
Well, they think it is.
They shouldn't be taking this as seriously as maybe they do.
Yeah, the fact that they have to put it in the EULA should be telling to you guys about where AI is right now.
So we're laughing about Microsoft, right. But maybe it's a reflection of the users, not Microsoft. That this has to be there. That's what makes this doubly funny.
So
they have to say it, and there's a reason they have to say it.
I agree with you, but I don't think the users are going to read it.
Oh, no. Of course not.
So of course not. Remember how they've got there's a Surgeon General that wants to slap a warning on social media, right? And it's like the same thing there. At least this EULA, nobody would know about this unless people like us bring it up or people at the Register bring it up. Because it is so silly, I don't think the users would have a clue. But you're right. I guess they're going to say when the user sues them because they lost their lawsuit or they lost their case or they gave bad advice thanks to the AI, they're going to sue Microsoft for it. They're going to say, hey, we told you it was junk. What do you want from us? It was in the EULA for crying out loud. So, yeah, it's kind of nutty out there.
Oh, very.
This is another one. This is a little heavier. Online publishers face dilemma. Allow AI scraping from Google or lose search visibility.
What?
Yeah. So basically, Google is going to block your company's, let's say it's a newspaper, what have you. So they're kind of using a strong arm here now, where they're saying, look, if you want to be found,
okay,
let us read your stuff for our AI. And that's kind of the government is going after Google, right, to break them up. And they probably will break them up, and they'll be more valuable broken up than they were as one company, as we saw with AT&T. But basically, they are saying, look, if you want us to show your publication is available via search, you need to let us scrape your information. And this is exactly the issue with AI, right? It's not, mm-hmm. it's artificial intelligence, but it has to be trained, and it has to be trained by quote unquote actual intelligence.
Right.
And, this is interesting, and we'll see what happens with this type of approach, because there's lots of folks who don't want to let the AI access their data because it's theirs. It's copywritten. They want Google to pay for it, right? There's like, we used to joke about, you know, Australia. You couldn't get the news in Australia because Facebook and those guys would say they won't let us, you know, take and link you that way because unless we paid the actual content provider. So here is Google again. Not only do they want to link your content, they now want to take your content.
Right.
The company that said they would, what, do no harm or not be evil?
Don't be evil.
Doesn't that feel evil to you?
Somewhat.
If you're writing content, you want to get paid for it.
Right.
So we'll see what's going on here with this, but I'll put a link up here for you guys. You can take a look at this article. This is from Engadget. And it's just where we're going. If you want the information, you want AI to have it, if you want to be found, you need to let them take it from you.
Ooh.
And that's just heavy, heavy, heavy handed.
Ouch.
So we'll put these links up here for you guys. We're going to be here till 11 o'clock. So John in Harrisburg, hang on. Nancy in Longmeadow. We're going to get to your calls after the bottom of the hour news. Everything we talk about has been posted over at computertalkwithtab.com. Dennis is posting it right here while we're talking about it. And Mike G is posting it live over to our Facebook account. If you follow us over at the Tab Computer Systems Listener Network, you can ask to join the group. We'll let you in unless you're just crazy. We're also broadcasting over to that Facebook group, sort of. I'm still limping along with this darn machine. I'm probably going to replace it at some point. It's not working so well, but it's up there. You can see our Facebook broadcast. And if you follow us on X, this is Elon Musk's purchase of Twitter, and follow us at Tab Computer Sys, all those articles will get into your news feed guaranteed. That is one of the benefits of working with Elon. So keep that in mind. And of course, two lines open for you, 860-522-9842 is the number. And thanks to GoNetsby, we're actually commercial free. Also, we're going to link again our September 21st event. We're going to broadcast live from Tab Computer Systems World Headquarters in East Hartford. We're going to do our e-cycling event. It's free. If you have electronic equipment that you want to get e-cycled, we're going to put the link up there, and you can see what it is. You can come on by. It's a very simple thing. You drive in. You drive through our little parking area there, and Environmental Office Systems is going to take the electronic equipment and responsibly e-cycle it or repurpose it, which is going to keep it out of the landfill.
Right.
It's free to you. Come by and say hi. Wave as you're going by. Dennis and I will be doing the show live.
Mm-hmm.
And we're just trying to help out and keep some of this stuff out of the landfill. Yeah. And offer a service for you so you don't have a bunch of junk in your basement. Whether you're a business or if you're residential, either way, we'll take the whatever you bring on down. The Environmental Office has a truckload and an army of people that join us on that Saturday morning. So put it on your calendar, September 21st, 9 to noon.
Okay.
Nine to noon at the Tab Computer Systems World Headquarters in East Hartford. We'll be right back.
Computer Talk with Tab is powered by GoNetSpeed, bringing you lightning-fast fiber internet. Visit GoNetSpeed.com for pricing and availability.
All right, we are back. This is Computer Talk with Tab. I'm Eric.
And I'm Dennis.
And we still have two lines for you guys. 860-522-9842 is the number. We're going to get right to your calls. You're nice enough to join us on this Saturday morning. We're going to go over to Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, and John first. What's happening, John?
Hey, how you doing?
Good, sir. How are you?
Oh, not bad. From Danbury, just moved down here about 2 weeks ago to Harrisburg, and still listening to you. Love the show. Fantastic.
Awesome. Thank you.
Got a problem, and I figured I'd give you two guys a chance, because if you can't fix it, I'm changing my phone number.
Unfortunately.
Here's the deal real quick. I opened up a Gmail email account because I'm getting a new Pixel phone this Monday.
Nice.
And the phone I have now is an old Lively phone. It doesn't go online. So I understand I have to have a Gmail account with the phone to make all the features work.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, I opened up an email account about a week ago. Used my phone number. Of course, it verified it and stuff. And I got on to the account a couple of times. A couple of days ago, all of a sudden, for some reason, whether it's me or whatever, my password would not be accepted. So we spent a long time trying to figure out how to correct this. And we finally made it to a recovery page that wanted the phone number. I okay. put the phone number in, and it tells me the number's no good.
Hmm.
I tried to even open up a new account, and when I put that phone number in, it says it's being used. Now, we spent 4 hours going crazy trying to figure out how to fix this. And
you and Google?
Well, there's nobody to talk to, as you know. There's no way to talk to nobody. And then even to do anything, you have to log on, and I can't log on. But what I'm going to do is I'm going to hand the phone over to my friend because he's the one who actually spent 4 hours on his phone trying to fix this. So in case you have any questions, you can ask him, okay?
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Yeah.
All right. Hold.
Hello?
Hello.
Hi.
Hey. So like John said, we went to the account recovery page.
Yeah.
And it would not recognize the phone number. And he doesn't have any recovery email connected to it. So we think we're just SOL and we can't recover the email.
So believe it or not, Google has really good support.
They do.
So
they told us that they won't change anything on Gmail over the phone or online.
They told you that through the chat?
Yes.
Okay, that's not good.
No.
So they're saying, well, that's Well, I guess you're going to get a new phone, but that same number is the one you want to use.
Yeah.
That's going to be a problem because if they're not letting you do it with that number, wow.
Yeah.
Now, so the password, you guys tried, checking the caps, the non-caps, whatever.
Yeah, we checked that.
What was the password?
The password was 3636 John.
Stop. You're the first guy that got that far. Don't tell me your password. But all right, but it was pretty straightforward. I just don't know why their number there would not be accepted. It's almost like it's sort of stuck in their system. So when you chatted with them, they said they couldn't help you because that's unlike Google.
Yeah.
Chat is so good.
I can try it again. You know what I mean? Later on today, when we come back from Walmart, we can try it again.
Yeah.
But they said that basically they don't. At first, I called them, and they said they don't do it with the phone. So
right.
I figured, okay, what about chat?
Yeah.
So I tried chat, and they told me the same thing, that they can't change anything in the Gmail over the chat.
They can't change anything in the Gmail over the chat. You got to the password recovery.
Yes.
Huh. I mean, the issue is we don't have a lot of power to deal with the account system over at Google.
Right,
right.
And the thing is, you do have a catch-22 because he wants to keep his phone number and you want to use a Pixel phone, which is a Google phone.
Right.
Creating a new Gmail account with the same phone number, that is going to be problematic. However, so you guys haven't picked up the phone yet, right? The Pixel phone?
No, we haven't picked it up yet.
Is it at Walmart? Is that where you're going to get it?
No, not at Walmart. Oh. We're just going shopping at Walmart.
Oh, gotcha. I mean, you might be able to recover the account through the phone number of the new Pixel phone because that is a real phone. But I'm trying to think of how that I don't know. It seems like you are stuck in a weird catch-22. But I can't imagine Google can't straighten it out. Did you tell them you've got a Pixel whatever on its way that you want to make sure you can use with this number? Do they care?
I didn't tell him that part. Maybe I should tell him that part. Maybe
I'll
make him more and more
right.
willing to help.
Yeah, because if you get on their chat, I mean, I've had some issues with Google products. Their chat is so amazing. They're very responsive. They fix things fairly quickly. I'm wondering if you can leverage it from the phone number side, because that's the problem. They have to release that number back to you. Now, you guys didn't have any kind of Google Voice issue, did you? You guys didn't get caught there with the Google Voice. Have you checked if that number is associated with you guys or no?
It said there was no account when we went to the Google recovery page.
Yeah.
So we were thinking, okay, there's no phone number. That means we can open a new email account, right?
Right.
Wrong. When right. we went to email, I said it found the numbers. It had been used too many times.
Yeah, that's the issue. It's what I'm wondering here. I wonder if there's a Google Voice account that's been kind of leveraged, which lots of people get tricked by that. I myself was tricked with that through Facebook Marketplace. So go check to see if there's a Google Voice account associated with that number and see if you can recover it. Maybe it's on that side of the issue that you have a problem. But you're really stuck, unfortunately, with Google on fixing this. There's nothing Dennis and I can do to override anything.
Right.
And they're just focused on their chat and focused on the fact that you're going to be getting a new phone, the new Pixel phone, that hopefully will perk their ears up. And there should be a fix from the phone side of the equation. Because, again, setting up a new Gmail account won't matter because you want to connect it to a number that they won't let you connect it to.
Yeah, exactly.
Any other thoughts, Dennis? Did you find anything?
What I was going to say is that about 5 or 6 years ago, I helped somebody recover their Gmail account.
Mm-hmm.
Under similar conditions, but mm-hmm. we went through the chat and they took care of it.
Right.
I mean, it took a while and you had to wait for, it seemed like we were waiting like 10 minutes for the chat technician to respond back and say he did something. But
right.
So I wouldn't recommend it as something that you would like to do, but they did help and they got it working.
And they should be able to send you a code to that number. If it's your number and you respond, they can then prove it's you. So I would go after that again. Go work on their support side of things and explain the situation in the way with the new phone coming.
Right.
And see if you can recover that. And use a better password. Just kidding.
Well, I recommended a better password too, but he's 67. He said he's hard for him to remember things.
I'm just kidding. So let us know if you get any success with Google support. But there's no magic we can do. We'd be just in the same boat you are.
Right. That's exactly it. We would be right where you are. Mm-hmm. So,
and I would say to myself, I'm going to use Google Chat support.
And again, I have done it with somebody before. So,
all right, guys.
Okay. All right. Thank you so much.
All right. Good luck.
Thank you. Bye bye.
Right, bye bye. That's so frustrating, though, when you get in those loops, and it does happen. It does happen.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
They should be able to fix it, though. Let's go to Long Meadow and Nancy. What's going on, Nancy?
Hi. Can you hear me?
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So I have a simple question. So the first one is with using an authenticator. Mm-hmm. So use Authy and Google Authenticator, just to back up for myself as well. Like whenever, instead of one in sales, I'll use the other one. So the problem is when I then created something actually for the other question that I have is about LifeLock. So I created an authenticator for them and so for LifeLock. And mm-hmm. unfortunately, they didn't sync, between the authenticator for the Google authenticator to the Life of the Authy. Mm-hmm. And so therefore, I want to remove both of them to then not confuse myself and then add them on again. I think maybe with the Authy, there's a way to do that, but I couldn't find where on the Google Authenticator where you actually you do the following in order to remove the account. Because even when I was looking around, all I can see is you totally wipe out the whole Google Authenticator. And I'm I don't want to do that.
No, you want to disassociate that account.
Right. I just want to that's what you're proposing. That's exactly what I want to do. Just disassociate this thing and just remove it and then sync up the whatever.
Yeah, sometimes it's just in the question. You got to ask the Googles that question. How do I disassociate an account with my authenticator? And we are doing that right now.
Yeah, that's why I was I thought they'll know right away.
Well, I haven't had this problem myself, so I haven't had to do this, but we are trying to see about
if anything could happen. I guarantee you, I have now experienced it.
Well, the thing is,
physical keys, anything.
Yeah, but you're trying. You've called here before. You're trying to really lock down your stuff.
Yes, I am. Hey, actually, that's what I'm calling about the LifeLock thing as well.
All
right. But yes, because I have the problem about what identity theft. Theoretical, but still, I want to lock down everything, and especially this thing, even though it doesn't sound as is now, but it was really scary when you hear about social security numbers. I'm what else? I mean, In my mind, I was thinking, like, why doesn't Elon Musk volunteer right now to fix up the government? He volunteered with Trump, right? Like, Elon, it can't come too soon.
I know. He's fixing a lot of things out there, but this is a big one.
I think what you have to do is press and hold on the entry in Authenticator for that account.
Yep.
And if you tap the menu button at the top right, I think you can delete it.
I'm just in it right now. Okay. Now I'm in the press on it. And all it does is, like, it copies it.
That's okay. But go up to the top right of the app, and there should be...
The trash barrel?
Well, the menu button will be, like, three dots vertical.
The ellipses.
Right now, I'm hitting the thing for a life lock. And so when I, press it.
Tap and hold it.
Tap and hold it.
And then it should say tap remove when prompted, is what I'm reading.
Tap remove. No, I'm just seeing something within, even like a pencil, like edit or trash can. That would be like a guess delete.
That would be a good remove, yeah.
Yep.
So if I do that.
That'll get rid of that account.
That'll get rid of that account in your authenticator.
Yes. Okay, remove the account. Okay.
There you go.
Ooh. All right. I was thinking, oh my God, if I eliminate things after all this thing and I have to reset all the authenticator things, I'll be.
No, yeah, it can get frustrating. You get nervous. You spend all this time and energy doing all this. You don't want to blow anything away. Yeah. But this one, now you've removed it. Now you should be able to go ahead and go back into your life lock.
For the Authy thing. And so I think it's probably the same kind of thing. Yeah.
Yeah, same thing for any of these authenticators. Just hold it. And then trash it if you want to start over.
Okay. All right. At least I'll be able to reset it. It was so weird that normally, like in my credit union, when they did the same thing, they synced up from one to the other. I could look and see it's the same number, whatever. It really worked. But this one, for some reason, it didn't. So anyhow, I can go on to the other question, LifeLock.
Mm-hmm.
So it just so happens that my credit union offers LifeLock, so I can use it free.
Nice.
So I was kind of like, la-di-da. So yeah, good. Like, I don't have to pay for it.
Yeah.
So when I was also like thinking, when they got to the questions about you monitoring things and they say, list all your credit cards, list all your bank accounts. And I'm like, well.
You got creeped out by
it. What happens?
Yeah.
What happens if LifeLock gets hacked?
Yep.
Yeah. It's a serious question.
Mm-hmm.
I know that they would be out of business.
Right. So here's the thing, right? I don't know that you need to have, and this is, I'm not talking against LifeLock, but I don't know that you need to have an entity monitoring and knowing all that information. You know,
right.
You pay attention to your statements, right? That way you'll know if there's any money being dripped out of your accounts. That's just you. I'm not sure LifeLock would notice it anyways. Mm-hmm. And if you had, I have a Discover card, right? So basically if anybody opens an, or if I don't open an account on my social security number, Discover will tell me, even if I'm doing it, it'll say, hey, did you open this?
Yeah.
And so you'll know if your identity is being stolen, and that's free if you're just a Discover card holder.
Yeah, I do have all of my credit card things frozen, for the bureaus.
Oh, then you're not even worried about.
I
was thinking my mind and saying, why am I entering this information anyhow? Because I think that all I wanted to do is have them monitor to say, like, hey, somebody tried to do something.
Right.
Yeah. Having a credit hold is at least as good as having LifeLock, if not better.
Except, as we talked with Experian in the past, you can actually use them to have the bad guys unlock your credit hold, and you may not even know that's happening.
Well, yeah, that's another issue.
Another issue.
But we have the issue of what happens if LifeLock gets hacked anyway. So
I agree with you on that feeling. And again, your banks, as far as I'm concerned, if any kind of money is exiting your banks, typically is an inside job anyways. Mm-hmm. And they're the ones that are going to have to make it right. So... it's one of those things that I agree with you, giving all that information to one entity that eventually will get hacked. It's only a matter of time.
Well, I stopped at the date of birth. I'm thinking, well, at least they have that probably anyhow, but still.
Yeah.
I'm like, after that, I was like, hey, I don't think they really need to do this other information or look on for whatever. And that's why I thought was blacking up my credit for the freezing it for the bureaus. And I don't have to worry.
Yeah, that'll do it generally. You do still have to worry, but you're definitely locking things down really well.
Well, as best as I can.
Yep. You won't be able to buy anything.
I changed my account, bank accounts to an authenticator thing. No, nice. No SMC or what, SMS, whatever it is.
Yep.
So, I'm just like trying.
You're doing a great job, Nancy. You're working hard.
You guys have helped me out so much. And that's why today I was calling, especially with that Social Security thing. I thought, well, if nothing else, it'll fill up 5 minutes of talking about like, hey, maybe you should or you shouldn't use this or whatever.
You're right, Nance, because you don't want to hear us about talking about our kids and our cats. I appreciate that. The listeners don't want to hear that. No, what you're doing is great. You want to protect yourself and you're doing the best you can to protect yourself. There's so many folks out there that don't. And even my own kids, I'm trying to get them to think more like this because they just think it's so easy and they think, hey, I don't have to worry about it. And you don't until you do. And Dennis and I have seen how the sausage is made, and it's not the best tasting sausage.
No.
Well, my friends think that I'm paranoid, and I'm like, oh, really?
Mm-hmm. You'll be laughing all the
when
way.
When somebody gets money stolen, hey, I'll be the last one person laughing.
Well, and there's that. So the issue more likely with your friends will be that they'll be tricked into giving it, right? They'll be asked to give it, and they will voluntarily, and no protection in the world is going to stop that. And that would be the truth for you too, but you are so on top of things that the odds of you saying, oh yeah, I'll give you $150 in gift cards because I have a fine due. of course I'll do that.
As long as I go into my authenticator and then my physical key, after 5 minutes of that, I'll be able to think, hey, why am I doing?
Exactly. Right. So you're way ahead of your friends, and you're not paranoid as far as I'm concerned.
All right. So here's my 5 minutes.
All right. Thanks, Nancy.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Hey. Yep. So she's trying to do her best. An authenticator, just so you guys know, it's a free app on your Google phone. Microsoft has authenticators. These are free number generators that you hook up into your accounts that you want to protect with two-factor authentication so that when you log in, you have to also type in this number.
Right. And that triggers a key exchange between your device and their service. And then everybody's happy.
And again, here's the other aspect of it. If someone's asking you for that number, you're being hacked.
Right.
Right. If anybody's ever on the phone with you and they say you're from their bank or you're from some sort of government agency and they're asking you to give them that number, you're now being hacked right there. You're going to give them the second factor. So that's why it says on the note that you get.
If you get the codes in SMS, it always says, don't provide this to anyone else.
So don't do it ever.
Right.
Because if they're asking for it, they're not good people.
Right.
Let's go on to Bristol and see what Jan's got cooking. Hello, Jan.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Good. How are you?
Good. I have a dilemma, and I have no idea how to solve this problem. I am getting spam emails, but they're coming from my Gmail address. And it comes to, and it's some bizarre email, and then reply to is something else. But if I were to mark it as spam, then my Gmail address would be marked as spam. How the heck do I get rid of this stuff? I mean, I have changed my Gmail password. I've done that.
Yeah.
Okay. Well,
but I'm still getting.
All right. Here's the thing. I don't think it's your Gmail address that is sending these out. Someone is sending from another account, and then they're just slapping the label with your name on it.
They're spoofing you.
They're spoofing you, but they're not even spoofing your actual account. They're spoofing some other account that they just put your name in as the label. So if you mark
on my name, my Gmail address comes up as the from.
Right.
Oh, her address is sending that out?
Yeah. No. So I know how, I mean, I understand that, and I've seen, this came from so-and-so. Oh, yeah, that's a friend of mine. But let me tap on the name and see what the email address is, and it's not their email address. I'm tapping on my name where it says from.
All right.
And it has my picture that I have in my Gmail account.
Okay. Have you gone to your sent folder?
And it has my Gmail address. This is coming from.
All right. So have you logged into the web-based version of Gmail and gone to your sent folders to see if those emails are actually coming out of your sent folder?
No, not yet.
Okay. Both Dennis and I are pretty confident they're not. All right, we're gonna go with that for now. So you log, when we're gonna come up at the news break, when you get off with us, go log into your Gmail account via the web, and go look at your sent folder, and just see if those emails are coming out of there.
I'm on my phone. I can't look at it in my.
You can try to do it that way too. I just think it'll be easier to do it on a bigger screen.
It might be easier to do it on a big screen. Yeah.
You can go to your sent folder, and if you see anything coming out of your sent folder, you're right. If you don't, you're being spoofed.
No, it's nothing out of my sent folder. So okay. How do I block these? I mean, I blocked the to person, and I blocked the reply to person, and the reply to person has been the same person, same email address, but it's like, how do I stop this?
Well, you can mark it as spam because we think there's an actual... Well, I guess we can talk to her about how to look at the header of the email.
Looking at the header of the email. I know how to do that.
And if it's got your actual address, that's one thing, but we don't think it's actually your address. We think it's a spoofed address, something that's similar. Like maybe your email address is, you know, using a different character, like a Cyrillic character to look like an A. I mean, stuff like that. But that's pretty advanced stuff. Why would they mess with Jan from Bristol that way? I don't think they would.
There are computer programs that will figure that out for somebody.
Yeah, it's true.
They can put in an email address and it'll generate something.
Yeah. So check your sent box. Sorry, go ahead, Jan.
There's nothing in my sent box that it's not in my sent box.
Then it's not you.
All right. The other thing to look for is if your email is being forwarded or if you have any other rules in place that are moving the mail around.
Mm. Okay.
Now, rules in Gmail free accounts generally apply only to incoming mail.
Right.
But I don't know if there are any outbound rules. I'm thinking if they had commandeered her account and were trying to send things out, they might hide them from her in the sent mail folders.
Right, they take that. They'd move the mail out
to some other folder.
Right,
or just delete it. But I think the rules only apply to incoming, so I don't think there's any ready way for them to do that in a free account.
Yeah.
But the thing you want to look for is any kind of forwarding of your mail.
Again, logging into the web-based flavor of it will be easier for you to see this stuff.
Yeah, I don't even think you can set forwarding options in the mobile app.
Yeah, I've never tried.
I think you need to do it in the web.
I should probably wait till I'm home and do it on my computer.
We think so, yeah. And I think if you find that there's nothing going on there and you're sent and you take a look at the rules and there's nothing going on there, you can comfortably mark yourself as spam.
Yeah. I think.
That's bizarre.
It is bizarre.
Then I can test it by forwarding something to myself from my Mac.com address.
Yeah. And if it gets to you, fine, then you're good.
Yeah. Oh, this is so much fun.
It is. You can also go when you log into the Gmail settings, go look at your spam settings to see if you can increase the settings to be more of a aggressive setting. That'll also reduce spam too.
Okay.
All right. That's a good one.
I will do that at home. Thank you so much, guys. I appreciate everything you do. I learned so much. Awesome. Awesome program. I love GoNetSpeed. Finally, it came to Bristol, and we have GoNetSpeed, and it's absolutely fabulous.
And it's affordable.
Yes, and they're wonderful to, sponsor the show so you guys can just talk about your kids and cats.
It is wonderful of them. We are so excited. We'll have Tom on too at some point to see what's going on with GoNetSpeed because they've been expanding like crazy.
Yeah. Wow.
So we can't thank them enough for helping us with that. And the state of Connecticut can't thank them enough for actually bringing in some competition. So thanks, Jan. We'll put some options here for you too to check out as far as things to look at. Okay.
And their referral program is fabulous. My daughter, quote unquote, referred me to GoNets. We both got $100 credit.
Nice. There you go. That's customer focused. Yeah. I love that.
Sign up for GoNetSpeed. time. Go find somebody that has it and have them, quote unquote, refer you.
Are you working a system?
Huh?
You're working the system.
Oh, I work. Are you kidding? I work the system.
All right, Jane, we got to let you go, but thank you.
All right. Thanks, guys.
Right.
Take care.
You too. Bye-bye. All right. We'll be right back.